Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast, number 122. It's Friday, the 11th of June. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have...
Rafe Plumford.
And Ewan Spence.
And I should mention, this is a football-free zone. If you're fed up with football, you're safe here. In fact, if you are into football, on our site, and there'll be a link in the show notes, there is a little... a selection of the best ways to keep in touch with the Football World Cup on your Symbian smartphone. But for the rest of you, we have talk and chat about smartphones and Symbian. Starting with a selection of news and items, the Nokia N8, the second of three video previews by Nokia are up. There's a link and a story up on the All About Symbian site, of course. Rafe, they mainly seem to be talking about applications here. I'm slightly puzzled as to why they're not emphasizing the really unique selling points of the N8, which are things like, you know, the OLED screen, the super spec camera. Do you think part three is going to be all about the hardware?
Well, I think this is partly about who they're trying to reach with this particular method. You know, they talked a lot about the hardware when they launched the phone. You know, they talked about the pentaband radio, the amazing camera. And actually, there are a series of posts on the cameras, some of which Steve wrote on All About Symbian, if you want the absolute lowdown on all of that kind of thing. But yes, perhaps they could be mentioning it a little bit more. And maybe that will come in part three. That said, of course, with the N8, you're also getting Symbian 3 for the first time. And there are a lot of changes in Symbian 3. As we can actually see in some of the videos, the UI has changed. There's also a refresh on a lot of the applications. And I think because that wasn't shown off at the launch, because it was a virtual launch and it mainly focused on just a few elements, particularly the hardware and the specifications, there's a lot of curiosity out there about what Symbian 3 is going to be like. And so with these series of videos, which is kind of focused at that web audience, it's probably gone more interest than most. I think that's probably why they're focusing on that. And after all, in this time, it did bring out the video editing, which is, you know, built into Symbian 3. And I think it showed quite a powerful video editor. Certainly, it's going to give one of the, I think, overall, when you combine it with the HDMI out, the Dolby Surround sound, and the sort of HD recording on the camera, is going to give one of the most powerful mobile video capture, editing and playback solutions available on any mobile phone.
Ewan, have you been watching any of these videos? Are they whetting your appetite still?
I have been watching them, and they're very nice from a let's get some information, right? But they're not creating any desire. They're not creating any emotional connection to me. There's nothing here that's like Steven Spielberg holding up a little sign that says, "Cry now." You know, there's no finish point where Ansi pops up with a very emotional look on his face and go, "Mr. Bond, you will want this phone deep in your heart now." It's just, and it has this, and it has this. It reminds me of, if you ask a 7-year-old, "What did you do in your summer holidays?" And "I did this, and then I built a fire, and then I cooked some marshmallows, and then I did this, and then I did that." They need to have a little bit of pizzazz, but I suspect I'm going to riff on this a little bit later on in the show.
Okay. Moving on, the Nokia 5228 has just launched in Germany. Don't get too excited. It's basically the 5230, which itself was a cut down 5800. And this time it doesn't have GPS and it doesn't have 3G. So what's next, Rafe? Are they going to do a phone without a screen and without a battery? How many more things can they take out of a phone?
Well, of course, there's a limit to what they can take out after this. But I'm just going to take issue with you calling it a cut down 5800 and a cut down 5230. I mean, this is just about segmenting the market. So the 5228 is kind of a European variant, I think, of the 5233, which is available in Asia. And as you say, it loses the 3G radio, loses the GPS. But this isn't aimed at people who are interested in that kind of thing. This is making the smartphone as cheap as possible and lets Nokia deliver its services, you know, messaging, Ovi Store, to a completely different market. And although people are going to go, "Oh, but the cost is such and such." Well, yes, it is, but that changes over time. And the reality is this will be available maybe £20 or £30 less than the 5230. The 5230 in the UK is available for about £80 now. I would be surprised if the 5228 got down to £60, but that £80 price point for the 5230 is kind of unique to the UK because of a slight subsidy offered on pairs you go. And so I think it's easy to sort of just see it as a cut down thing, but really this is about continuing to open it up to more and more people. I absolutely agree that yes, it has less functionality, but when we're in these low price points, in these lower tiers, you know, the £10, £20 difference does make a significant difference as to whether people are able or want to buy the device themselves. it's worth pointing out here that I think it's probably Nokia trying to stretch a little bit to sort of get this cheap price point, when in reality, probably what they wanted to do was let Series 40 go touchscreen, which was on the cards at one point, but that was sort of reserved for S60. And this is, in a sense, I think it's probably better to think of the equivalent to a Series 40 touch phone. The fact it runs S60 is really down to Nokia's software strategy from a couple of years back. But yes, interesting device nonetheless, even if it's got no interest to sort of geeks or high-end users whatsoever.
I think this is a fantastic device. And Steve, let's face it, they are not sitting up there in Finland playing motherboard Kerplunk and taking off bits of the circuit board until the phone doesn't work anymore. Although I suspect with the winter coming up, that might be a nice game that Finland would like to adopt. Is it cut down? Yes. If you are used to paying £500 or £600 for your smartphone, if you want to have everything in there, if you're the sort of person that bemoans even the 50 milliamps loss in battery power, yes, it's cut down. But the point is, Nokia is not a silo company that's addressing one market. It is addressing hundreds of markets. And this phone has been built to, I would suspect, by request of T-Mobile. They've went, we would like all of this, we would like these functions, we would like it to hit this price, and we would like it to have something whizzy that we can put on the bullet points in the shop. So we'd like it to say touchscreen, we'd like it to say, you know, data connected, we'd like it to increase our data revenue ARPU, and that is exactly what the 5228 is. We're going to see more of these variants customized for the networks, and that is a good thing because it bolsters Nokia's bottom line, it keeps them steady, it keeps the money coming in, it builds up familiarity of the networks with Nokia's S60 range, which is lacking in some geographic areas, and it gets people used to Series 60. We should see an explosion in people using these phones, which is great for developers. Let's see. It doesn't have GPS. Oh, okay, that's not a problem. As long as you don't hand it to a British officer, somebody can look up and look around. I'm at this street and look at the map function and get them there. They can also have cell tower location, which will give them a relatively rough fix and certainly good enough for the location-based features that Nokia are pushing through OV Maps. It doesn't have Wi-Fi. Again, you know, the 5230, I managed quite happily at some of the biggest tech conferences in the US without Wi-Fi on the 5230. So, you know, your data use is going to be there. They want you to buy some data packages so they can get their ARPU. I think this is a perfectly good phone. I think it fits nicely in with Nokia's strategy. It does flag up the warning sign, and the warning sign is that Nokia are building to spec and to price and not to emotion. We need to see some emotion coming in those top-range phones again so they can flood down in the next couple of years to take in the low-end phones. But right now, this is Nokia following the strategy of S60 going into as many devices as possible that we've talked about here many, many times. And, you know, would you rather have 100,000 S60 smartphones out there at £500 each or 10 million smartphones out there at £100 each? If you're a developer, you will probably want the latter.
Talking of emotion, Ewan and I are available for hire if Nokia want to bring us onto their Nokia N8 or subsequent devices demos. We can put plenty of emotion and passion in, can't we, Ewan?
Yes, we can. We would be able to add two tones of voice to any finished press conference. Oh, sorry, that was three.
Yes, wrong emotion. Talking also of emotion, I get fairly emotional and passionate about things like screen visibility in the sunlight, as you will have spotted on the All About Symbian site, link in the show notes to the article. I was comparing displays with IPS technology. That's the one used in the Apple iPad and the new upcoming iPhone 4, which we may mention later on. I was to this traditional TFT, to transflective, to OLED. And I bring this subject up one more time because this very morning I've just received the first Super AMOLED handset I've ever played with, and I've been testing it out in sunlight. It's actually the Samsung Wave, which is one of their Bardar smartphones, but I've also got the Galaxy S coming for review. Now Nokia's upcoming N8 uses traditional OLED rather than Super AMOLED, but the Super AMOLED, the main difference is the fact that the capacitive layer is exactly the same layer as the OLED. The sensing technology and the display pixels are all part of the same layer, which eliminates one layer from the construction and gives you much less reflectivity in terms of seeing images of the clouds rather than images of your display on the screen. So I've just been testing it head-to-head against the Samsung i8910 HD, which is as close to the N8 as I think we're going to get until we actually see one. So again, that's a About 3.5, 3.7 in the Samsung's case, traditional OLED, and the two side by side, the Samsung Super AMOLED versus OLED, there really is no comparison. Samsung have done a very, very good job. The display contrast in full sun isn't anywhere near as good as transflective, as we've seen on the Nokia non-touch phone, for example, and on the older Apple iPhones. It's not that good. But you get all the advantages of OLED, and it is a lot more readable. Certainly in full sunlight, I could still read what was on the screen. Not pleasantly, but I could read it. Whereas the traditional OLED screens, like on the i910 and the Nokia N85, N86, and upcoming N8, they were virtually unreadable in full sun. So a big heads up there. I really wish Nokia had gone with Super AMOLED or licensed the technology. Maybe they will for future devices. Have either of you played with Super AMOLED or seen it in the flesh at a show, maybe, Rafe?
Yes, sir. Yes, I saw the Super AMOLED device when I was in Barcelona, and it impressed me too. It's certainly a step forward on the screen technology, and you know, if you're looking at it inside, it looks absolutely gorgeous. Whether you need this really big step up inside is open to debate, perhaps because the AMOLED is already pretty good. It is worth pointing out here that the N8 AMOLED screen is actually next generation on from the IT910 and the N86, so it'll probably fall somewhere in between the two. I wouldn't expect it to match the Super AMOLED screen technology on the new Samsung Wave device. But you know, these things are stepping forward all the time, and it's encouraging to hear from you, Steve, that the outside performance of Super AMOLED is an improvement over sort of the standard AMOLED. But yes, it does make me fond for the days of the transflective screens, which are that much easier to view outside. And as you said in your article on the site about this, it is something that's, you know, seems to be underrated. And I think perhaps, you know, a bit more attention could sometimes be paid to it in reviews. And certainly we're going to try and do that in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we'll stay on top of this and report on devices for the rest of the year. I suspect we're going to, as you say, we're going to start seeing display technology catching up with outside visibility as more and more people recognize it's a problem. Even on some of the main American podcasts now saying, oh, they're actually including in their commentary, but you can't see the screen outside, which is not something I've heard people mention before 2010. So there is greater awareness, and I'm sure manufacturers are on the case and investigating the new technologies and maybe even introducing transflective layers into existing screens. Expedia has been added to Ovimaps. This is a hotel booking service available in the UK and USA. Funnily enough, I booted up Ovimaps on all my devices and Expedia didn't show up on any of mine. Did you get any success here, Rafe?
I haven't actually seen Expedia show up on mine. I imagine it's sort of rolling out gradually, so it will appear for people. However, okay. I did get to try the equivalent HRS when I was in Finland. And this is kind of a standard add-on to Ovimaps, and Nokia can plug whichever service provider they wish into it. And as you say, in the case of the UK and the US, it's going to be Expedia. HRS, I believe, is used in Finland and Germany. But essentially what it does is it uses your location, looks up whatever are the nearest hotels to you, and lets you book them from your phone. And you can either do that by doing a booking directly on the phone in some cases, or you can it will connect you to the right number to do that. And the point is, it gives you sort of availability options from your phone, so you don't have to ring up 100 hotels to find out whether they've got rooms available. It also gives pricing and a few reviews and other bits of information. So it's a good way, you know, if you need to book a hotel immediately. I think this will particularly appeal to business travellers. You can, of course, also use it to book a hotel ahead of time. It's not just tied to location stuff, as you know, it's not just, oh, I'm standing next to the hotel, let's book it. You can book it in advance of your trip. But I think it's really intended for those people who, you know, end up on a business trip, get off the plane, decide they need a hotel for the night, and go ahead and do it straight away. I think there is a certain amount of demand for that. But it's also a great example of how Nokia is planning to use Ovimaps as kind of a base for aggregating location services on top of Ovimaps, and hotel booking is just the first step. We're going to see many, many more of these types of things going forward in the future.
Now, I have a question for you, Rafe. It's a technical question. When you boot up Ovimaps 3.3 and 3.4, you get the new layout screen with the My Position, Drive, Walk, and so on. And then down below, you've got things like the Michelin Guide Lonely Planet, and now these, in theory, Expedia will pop up. Now, as I understood it from talking to you in previous occasions, this home screen of Ovi Maps is kind of generated on the fly, if you to a certain extent, but so that Nokia can change something on their servers and it can just appear in people's version of Maps. How is this possible? When you bring up Maps, it appears instantly before you connect to the internet. So is it that part of the screen is static and part is built dynamically? How does that work?
It's a good question, and I don't know the absolute answer to this, but some of it is cached. So if you use it entirely in offline mode, you will get the basic set of sort of functionality, so walk, the drive, sort of look up favourites, things like that. If you actually log in using your Ovi username and password, that will then bring up the relevant travel guides for your particular area. I think that's partly done via GPS and partly done via your SIM card. And so you'll notice if you haven't logged into Ovi on the server, you probably won't get the Michelin and other guides. And Ovi Maps will tend to connect most times, obviously, to do that login process. And I suspect that's when it will be downloading the extra bits of information. But bear in mind, it probably only does that periodically, and it will be cached on the device. So the amounts of data we're talking about are very small indeed, probably just a couple of kilobytes, if that.
And there's also the addition of the More icon as well in the latest versions. It's most of the time when these new services, I think, are going to be under this More icon, because when you click on that, it will ask you, can I go online to use the services? And then it's almost like the widgets that Nokia have placed you can use on the home screens.
That's right, Ewan. I mean, the More stuff is going to generally be for services that don't fit on the home screen. There's still some questions around how exactly Nokia is going to integrate all of this in terms of applications that will sit on top of Ovi Maps. At the moment, you're right, they're using that More icon and connecting online. That's particularly when they are interacting with web services. You'll note that there's a similar thing is being used for accessing Quipe, which was recently added to Nokia Maps directly. In some countries, you'll also see a discounts button or a vouchers button, and that lets you go online and get vouchers for shops that are within about a kilometre of your current location. That's pretty interesting. So, you know, you can log on and it will say, if you go into this coffee shop and show the voucher on the phone to the person behind the town, you'll get 50 euro cents off your coffee or whatever it happens to be. And yes, there is obviously going to be some debate about how do you deal with this online, offline issue. But I think we'll hear more about that when the next version of Ovi Maps comes out later this year.
Moving on, I saw that Nokia notifications have just appeared in Nokia Beta Labs. This, as I understand it, I think, Ewan, did you have a look at this? So this was a way of putting missed calls and such like on the home screen.
Indeed, yes. It's a home screen widget for the N97 and the N97 Mini. And it's an interesting use here of Beta Labs. Previously, Beta Labs have been for stuff that they're trying out to see if it works. Nokia Notifications has actually went to Beta Labs almost as a release candidate to check for any obvious bugs in a public environment. It will be shortly available in the Ovi store, and that's where the smaller bugs will be addressed. This is essentially a confidence release, and so people can try it maybe 3 or 4 weeks ahead of the full release to see if there are any big showstoppers out in the wild. It's a very sensible way of using old Beta Labs. And Nokia Notifications itself, it takes your messages, missed calendar alarms, calls and voicemails, and rather than have lots of icons all over the home screen, it presents them in one single box. You can then call up and see a list of the events. It's a different way of organizing those notifications because it has differed between the N-Series devices, the E-Series devices, and the plain number devices. This is lifting the idea that's been used in the E-Series devices that's been proved popular and being brought into the 97 and the 97 Mini. So all in all, it's a nice idea. It's a small UI tweak. It's going to be an optional availability. It's grafting itself on top of 5th edition, what I suspect is actually going to be built into Root 3. And yeah, it works. That's about all you can say for it. It works. It does what it needs to do in the tin, and it goes away again and doesn't bother you again at any other time, which is a good thing for an application to do.
Yep. Talking of working, you were also on a story last week, Ewan, about Tesco and Subway loyalty cards. Now, this is an idea, as I understand it, where you boot up a Java app and you type in your club card or your Subway card details, and it brings up, among other things, a barcode on the screen, which retailers can then scan. Now, I've tried this sort of thing in the past with Tesco. I think it was one of their Tesco Home Extra superstores, and I reserved something at home, and I was given something to print out, and I Also, as emailed across a barcode, I thought, well, I'll try both methods. So I took along my phone with the barcode, nice and big on the N97 screen, so 3.5-inch screen, no problems of size. Plonked it in front of the cashier. She tried scanning it about 10 different ways, and we could not get a match. It would not read the screen. Do we think that these new methods are going to be more reliable, and that the Tesco and Subway barcodes will actually be readable in store?
I think that they're going to be reliable given time. These are obviously early moments for vouchers online. And it's also fair to point out that it's not just Tesco and Subway. Starbucks have applications available in America that can be used in these barcode environments. And of course, we have QR codes that have been going around for a long time. There is obviously going to be a technology disparity here. Every single supermarket is not going to have exactly the same laser barcode scanners. Lighting conditions are going to be different. Phone screens at the moment are going to be slightly different. And the resolution of pickup is not quite there. But what we should be praising is the fact that they're actually going out and trying this sort of stuff. I know Rafe's really excited about the fact that it ties in lots of different bits of your online and digital world into one device. But I just love the idea that they're pushing these out and they're making it, you know, more tangible. You don't have to carry all these plastic cards with you. You can have it all in your phone. Certainly when I showed the Tesco club card on my phone to Vicky, she's like, right, I need to have that in my phone right now. You know, and here suddenly was an application that had a connection that again, I'm using that word emotion in this podcast. What is it? I love you really too much. And it's like, that's it. That will help me in my day. It means I don't have to worry about carrying something else. It's just there and I can use it. And it has interactive features as well. At the moment, it allows you just to call up your points. It wouldn't surprise me if we begin to see vouchers and discounts appear if you're using the loyalty card on the smartphone. I think it would just be it's a win for the consumer. It's also a win for the marketer inside Tesco as well. I think this is a lovely forward-looking application. Yes, it may be ropey just now, but I remember when VGA cameras were all the rage.
And who knows, maybe this will work better with some of the OLED screens coming up, which are much brighter, and maybe they'll respond better with the in-store scanners. So anyway, yes, it looks very promising all round, and more pleased in terms of the app stores. Moving on, Symbian and Baidu, I hope I pronounced that right, Rafe. They have announced a strategic initiative. People love announcing strategic initiatives. They will see the two companies establish a joint laboratory to stimulate the development of box computing on mobile devices. Rafe, I haven't the faintest idea what this is about. Can you explain this new story in words of two syllables?
Right, this is the idea that Baidu, which is the biggest Chinese search engine, is going to cooperate with Symbian to bring its services integrated into the Symbian platform, especially for Symbian products in China. That's particularly the Nokia TD SCDMA products. So all you really need to know about this is that it's going to enable sort of more advanced search services. And the box computing that's being referred to is the idea that rather than just presenting you with a list of text search results, it will actually present you with the information you need or a direct link to the service or the thing that you're downloading. So, for example, if you type in, you know, currency exchange rate, it will give you the currency exchange rate result rather than just a website about it. Or if you ask for download antivirus, it will give you a direct link to download a piece of antivirus software. It's the idea of sort of taking search results beyond just a simple list and actually providing the information you want directly. Box computing is kind of Baidu's initiative for building this kind of next generation of search. They wanted to partner with Symbian because they see that there's a great potential in doing it on mobile. That's because roughly 60% of people on the internet in China are mainly accessing through their mobile phone, and those numbers will probably climb over time as well. Symbian was the choice of partner because 70% of the smartphone segment in China is using Symbian, and obviously Symbian is going to be keen to do anything to get into a market as important as China. You know, that is going to be one of the very big growth markets going forward. So really, it's a win for Symbian in terms of getting seriously established in the Chinese market, and that kind of integration with the local search service is going to make the product more appealing. You know, this is the equivalent to having Google search box on your home screen, on your smartphone, and having it better integrated than your competition. And that's what will be the advantage for Symbian going forward in this. So really, it's about sort of establishing, you know, a better presence or building better solutions in the Chinese market for Symbian.
Yeah, and it does make me chuckle, as ever, the sheer size of the Chinese and Asian and even African and South American phone markets compared to the American phone market. The American tech press would lead you to believe that, you know, that their market is dominant and representative of the rest of the world. When in actual fact, from I remember your map that you did a photo of showing the number of new subscribers per second and per minute from different parts of the world. And I have to say that the American smartphone market is probably something like, what, 10-15% of the world's smartphone market at most, Rafe?
I can't remember the figures off the top of my head, but yes, that sounds... let's see. Yeah, no, that's smaller than about like right. Probably around 15%. It's broadly equivalent to Western Europe. But yes, by the time you start adding in Eastern Europe, Asia, yes, I mean, Asia is actually the biggest market at the moment. But yes, you're quite right. You know, if in any sense, you know, there's a pattern to be drawn, it's that the US is rather a market apart in terms of the pattern for smartphone usage. It's not completely true that, but as ever, you have to take the global view and look at it in context. And I think perhaps because the American market is still relatively big, I mean, we're still talking about tens of millions of smartphones, it is quite inward-looking in the way the media covers it, which I think gets seen in particularly the way that Android and iPhone are covered generally in the tech press.
Talking of the iPhone launched at the start of this week, as we're recording it on the 11th of June, was, of course, the Apple iPhone 4, launched in a blaze of glory by Mr. Jobs. And the main changes that I think we need to just pay attention to in the Symbian world, the form factor has now changed in that there's virtually no plastic involved. It's there's tempered glass front and back and a stainless steel band stroke frame around the outside, which also doubles as the antenna. And in these days of some smartphones, not necessarily in the Symbian world, some smartphones being accused of poor reception from Wi-Fi and 3G and so on, to have the antenna actually built into the frame of the device in that way is rather innovative. It'll be interesting to see what happens when a human hand with conductivity actually starts gripping it and starts changing the electrical characteristics. I'm sure they've tested this, but I would like to see it for myself. So kudos to them for that. Also kudos to Apple for upgrading the camera on the iPhone from 3 megapixels to 5 megapixels in a way that doesn't just bump the megapixel count by keeping a small sensor. They've actually made sure they've got decently sized pixels there. They've also got backside illuminated sensor, which is a sort of quite an advanced camera technique whereby you sort of reverse the way the sensor works so that the pixels get the maximum possible light and the minimum electrical interference. So that's an innovative technique as well to be using. And they're claiming some pretty high quality photographs, and some of the samples do seem to bear that up. But again, we need to test that in the real world. But kudos again to Apple that they've gone down the same sort of route that Nokia went down with the N82, N86 and N8, in that they're focusing on, you know, real world photo quality rather than just chasing a higher megapixel number. Also of note on the specs front, the display has been doubled in resolution in each direction. And up to, I think it's 960 by 480, something like that. Over 300 dots per inch. Certainly high enough that you can't see the pixels anymore. And comparing it to some of my older Nokia Corta VGA devices is going to be a bit embarrassing, I suspect. There's also one final thing on the iPhone 4 is that the of course iOS, which is they've now renamed iPhone OS, has this kind of pseudo multitasking. So they're saying, right, the iPhone now checks all the boxes in the smartphone world. It's got multitasking. It kind of hasn't, but I see where they're coming from, and it is an interesting approach. Rafe, what were your takes on all this and the iPhone 4 launch?
Yes, the iPhone 4 is very interesting to my mind. And in many ways, I think this is the first iPhone that sort of measures up in terms of sort of the basic technical specifications, things like the camera, but also other bits and pieces. I would draw some note of scepticism over some of the things you were talking about, things like the RF. Apple traditionally hasn't been at its strongest here. Hopefully it will have improved. We'll have to see how they do. And similarly in the camera, certainly the signs are promising. Although with the thinness of the device, there isn't a lot of room for a camera module, and there are some inherent limitations there. And there's a good reason that there's a hump on the back of the N8 for the camera. Part of that scepticism does come from the way that Apple present these devices, you know, using terminology which is, frankly, marketing speak a lot of the time, things like the Retina display, but also, you know, saying this is the best ever, this is magical, this is amazing. And Apple don't have the sort of best track record in that respect, in sort of saying this is the first time it's ever been done. Well, actually, no, it's not the first time it's ever been done. So certainly I think the iPhone 4 will have a lot of appeal. However, there wasn't really as much new as I was expecting. And we said the same thing about iOS 4. The multitasking is welcome, but as Steve suggested, perhaps not the full deal there. I think that may come in time. The problem on multitasking, I suspect, will be with third-party developers being willing to implement it, and it's uncertain how that will pan out. But it does seem very clear to me that we're approaching a period where we're going to have much closer parity in terms of the sort of the basic specifications between things like Android, iPhone, and Nokia's high-end devices. Nokia are going to be a few months behind, I think, but the N8 certainly, I think probably in terms of specifications, is the most superior device. You can look at something like the processor, but then you have to level that against, you know, the resource requirements of the respective platforms. Engadget did an interesting comparison, and the N8 did come out on top in terms of number of categories. But again, those are a bit meaningless. It's what it's like in the real world. And Apple's going to have a big thing, obviously, with the App Store. I think even over time, that's going to come out with parity. What will be interesting to see is the MeeGo devices forthcoming, because I think Nokia very much positioning those as a step ahead of Android and the iPhone. And they're kind of looking to squeeze iPhone and high-end Android devices between Symbian and MeeGo over time. And so this level playing field is actually sort of changing the game a little bit. And then it comes, I think, a lot more about what's most important to people in terms of things like, is it hardware quality or camera? Is it the apps? Is it something else? And there are, you know, philosophical differences that has been already spoken about in terms of, you know, the closed Apple system versus a more open Android system versus Nokia, which is, you know, probably arguably the most open of the lot, depending on which type of openness you look at. You know, there has been in recent months a little bit of a reaction against the sort of control on the Apple iPhone front, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays into iPhone 4, you know, particularly talking about the sort of surge of Android sales in the American market. People are saying, have, you know, iPhone sales plateaued? I think it's probably that's too early to say that has happened. I think the iPhone will continue for a little while, but I don't think it's going to be quite as unique and special as it was before. And this is really Apple's problem. In order to stay ahead of the game, it needs to continuously innovate and be ahead of everybody else. And while I feel that iPhone 4 is, you know, an extremely compelling device, I don't, you know, feel it has that same gap as it was perceived to have once, which is rather ironic given that it's actually caught up in some ways in hardware terms. I don't think that kind of specialness of it will apply so much in the latter half this year. Nonetheless, it certainly still remains a very attractive device, and people shouldn't write it off. And I think it's important to say that Nokia, you know, can't afford to be complacent about this sort of thing. And clearly people are going to compare it with the N8, despite the fact the N8 isn't really Nokia's competitor with the new iPhone 4. It's a slightly lower down device, as is reflected in the price point. It's really going to be the MeeGo devices and perhaps some later Symbian devices that are going to directly compete with the iPhone and with the Android devices. So yes, it was interesting to see the launch. But as I say, I was a little bit surprised not to see some extras that were maybe putting it ahead again. But perhaps I'm being, perhaps I'm being a little unfair there. As Steve talked about, there are quite a few new additions to the iPhone, which are certainly going to make it more people to sort of, do I want to upgrade this now, or am I going to wait for the next one? And I think there's going to be a lot of people upgrading to iPhone 4. And if I'm being cynical, I'll say it's because it looks different and they want people to know they've got the latest device. But things like the multitasking in particular, but also some of the changes for the camera and the screen, I think do make it quite a compelling device.
What I found interesting is, well, first of all, I've pulled out a Nokia 2110 and blown the dust off it. My excuse is I'm packing up to move house, so I've got lots of old phones around. The iPhone 4 is exactly the same size as the battery on the 2110 from all those years ago. The phone that was the cutting edge of, it can do SMS as well. The battery is the same size now as a smartphone. Also, interestingly, I have this aerial on the top. And it's part of the frame, and it's on the outside, and I can even extend it. So the iPhone 5, extendable aerial, that's my betting tip there to get the stuff going. but on serious things, 2 points. First one, I remember back when the iPad launched, I suggested that we would see that the idea for MacBooks slowly disappear and the iPod become the iPad and the operating system become the basis for the next computer because Steve Jobs would get to control the entire application change. Did you see all the announcements about the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros and everything at the keynote?
No.
Exactly. I'm telling you, iOS 4 is going to be running the next MacBook Air. Right then, what was the other thing? Yes. A challenge for Nokia's senior team. Sit down with a specification list of the iPhone and the product announcements that were made today and do your keynote. Sit down and actually get the top people at Nokia to do the presentation as if they were Apple, to see the difference in style and substance that the presentation makes on the same book of facts, and then sit down with focus groups and work out why one keynote works and one keynote doesn't in getting press, in getting emotion. That what the iPhone and all the developer conference keynotes there wasn't just about the technology, it was about the emotion. It was going, look, this, you can do this with your phone. The video from Sam Mendes was pure cry now, cry now, cry now. And you suddenly believe this phone is something that I desperately want. Compare that to the almost clinical approach that Nokia are taking just now with the N8, but have done previously. There must be a middle ground. Apple is very zealous. Finland, you know, Nokia is very Finnish. Somewhere in the middle is a sweet spot for promoting the next range of smartphones. And I think that a company that finds that will be able to do mass market and niche and appeal to all areas.
It's a really interesting point that you're, and I know quite a few other people have made this on the web. I would just put the counter argument that Nokia is not Apple and Apple is not Nokia. They are fairly fundamentally different companies in terms of their business model and their mode of operations. I think it's very easy to say you need to do a Steve Jobs style keynote, but I don't think that's the answer. I think there has to be, you know, another way of doing it. And you spoke about the middle ground, so I think I agree with you there. But the thing is, when you're producing a single product and you've got a single charismatic figure, doing the Steve Jobs style keynote is going to work very well. But I think the importance of those is to a degree overemphasized. Yes, it creates a tremendous amount of excitement and a tremendous story around a product launch, but that works fine if you've got a single device. Could they do that every single time? No, and there have been Steve Jobs keynotes that have fallen much flatter because there hasn't been the same perceived level of interest or excitement, or, you know, people say, oh, no, Apple didn't quite manage it this time. And so for a company like Nokia to replicate that, it's just not really possible. You know, they're producing, what, 30-plus mobile phone models a year. They're also talking about services on multiple occasions. You know, a very different, you know, type of company in terms of the way they produce the products as well. They aren't centralized around just a couple of individuals. You know, Nokia is, in one sense, much more sustainable in terms of business operations. It's broken down into lots of different product teams who do work together, but, you know, there'll be a product manager responsible for the N8 and for any future forthcoming product. You know, they aren't all controlled through at board level. You know, strategy in terms of we're going to have three software platforms, we're going to invest in this kind of service direction, absolutely, that's decided at the high sort of board level, the equivalent to the Apple board. But you won't see them having individual meetings about one particular product. You know, yes, they'll be kept up to date with it. So that means, you know, can you do things in the same way? No, of course you can't. And, you know, this reflects into the fact that Apple and Nokia, as I say, are fundamentally different companies. You know, it's a single product versus, you know, products right across a portfolio that produce globally, very many different price points, etc., etc. And so in some ways, this press obsession with, you know, comparing Apple and Nokia directly, I think is a bit misguided. In one sense, I think it's a compliment to Nokia that people do this so frequently, because really you're just talking about a single part of Nokia's business, which is competing directly against Apple. You know, the fact is, a lot of the time at the moment, you'd still be comparing Nokia to their traditional competitors, you know, Samsung, Motorola, Sony Ericsson, LG, and the truth is there, Nokia has performed absolutely amazingly. You know, the fact it is really now competing with, you know, Google and with Apple in people's mindsets just shows how successful they've been over the last decade. And, you know, people are saying they're not competing well against Apple or Google. Well, yes, I think that's perhaps fair to say at this point in time, particularly at the high end. But when you look at, you know, this on a couple of year timescale, the fact they're in that position is quite an achievement. And I think we will see things change fairly rapidly as we move into 2011, as some of the new high-end devices come out on Symbian 3 and on MeeGo, and some of the Ovi service stuff starts coming together with the Qt strategy, something that Nokia had been planning over the last few years and are now starting to execute on. Doing it fast enough? No, always room for improvement. But it is interesting to see this direct comparison, which, as I say, I think rather underestimates and rather ignores an awful lot of Nokia's business. The most obvious example is developing well, but that applies just as much in other countries. You know, there's a reason Nokia is still the biggest market share in smartphones, and if you look at mobile phones more generally, that's even more true. And ignoring that part of the business is, you know, rather ignoring what Nokia does and is making for sort of inaccurate comparisons.
But in the same breath, Nokia are in the same space as Apple. They are selling phones.
Absolutely.
They're in the same space as Google. I don't see any championing from Nokia. We have a press conference like, here's our new phone. Here's a new phone. There are people inside Nokia that get passionate about their products. Every product leader inside Nokia has to fight for resources, and they will not fight for it over a nice cup of tea and a biscuit and a very nice and calm voice. They will get excited. They will champion the devices. They will be the biggest advocate possible. I'm not saying that the ANSI suddenly needs to stop, you know, walking out and being some sort of Bond villain and coming out with a white jacket and a small white cat, you know, to be dramatic and theatrical. But you can still get emotion. You can still get people fired up and enjoying the product at a visceral level quite easily. Even in the Steve Jobs keynotes, he brings out the people who've been championing the project, for example, the iBooks project, and they will enthuse and station. They will give out in their enthusiasm. Right, whoever's leading the Nokia N80 men, get them out the press conference, get them excited. Whatever's been driving them for the last year and a half has to be communicated to the audience, which is the press, which is then communicated out to everybody else. And are people considering them in the same breath as Google and Apple? Yes, but Nokia never gets, it's not Google, Apple and Nokia, it's Google and Apple. Oh yeah, and then there's Nokia, and then there's RIM, and, you know, they're down to second tier. I'm obviously being slightly devil's advocate here for the benefit of the podcast and the listeners, and at some point they have to turn around and fight. And I just hope that they've got the ammunition stockpiled and all the new software and services, and they hit it as a home run. Because if they stumble, putting everything on a one-shot all-in with all the software services, which is how it will be perceived, may well be considered riskier than keeping enthusiasm bubbling on for 3 or 4 years.
Absolutely. The one thing I'd say there is the perception it's one-shot. It isn't one-shot. That's the whole point about Nokia. And, you know, I agree with you. All I'm saying is I think perhaps suggesting that Nokia should be expected to operate in the same way as Apple and Google in terms of the marketing, the communications, the presentation of products is a mistake. They will need to find their own way. Do they need to improve it? Absolutely. And you talked there, you know, about emotion, finding the right champions, telling the stories behind devices. And yes, that's something they need to do. But the automatic assumption that the only way to do this is the Apple way is incorrect. And I think we will see that come out very strongly in the next couple of years.
I could call it there, guys. That I think we've had enough to and fro, and the podcast is way over length. But thank you for that debate. What I disagree with you, and by the way, the disclaimer on what Ewan said, I don't think macOS is going anywhere soon. I know there's been a few blog posts on that. There are huge differences between a desktop class multi-user operating system and the kind of cut down nodded version on the iPad and iPhone, but that's another discussion for another podcast for another day. Also want to just trail on the subject of what we've just been talking about, that on the All About Symbian site, the week you're currently listening to this, there should be a Nokia N8 versus Samsung i9 10 versus Sony Ericsson Satio versus iPhone 4, which would be kind of our version of the Engadget table, only with some commentary and with some slightly more specific and Symbian relevant devices. So do look out for that. In the meantime, though, it is goodbye from us. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Litchfield. Don't forget the T. And Rafe, what's your Twitter handle?
Rafe Blanford.
And Ewan?
Ewan.
Just EWAN. He managed to wangle that Twitter handle, so well done. So do fire off questions there for next week's Insight podcast. Do follow us on the site. Do keep all the comments coming in. We do appreciate it. We love running the site. But for now, it's goodbye and see you next week.